friends, countrymen, Americanian fans around the world. As always, I am your host, HVK. Let me bring the microphone a little bit closer here. And we got an interesting one. This was not actually an episode I intended to make. I don't really have notes for it, but there was a series of things that I saw this week that are simultaneously completely unrelated and yet completely related. So we're going to cover some stuff in the realm of X-Men, some stuff in the realm of Tomb Raider, but we are going to start with Jesus, which is probably not something anybody expected me to begin with here, but we are going to start with Jesus himself. And this very, very interesting Super Bowl commercial that took place, and I have not watched football. I'm a sports fan. I have not watched football in some length of time. I think the NFL made its stances on certain things very clear. Two national anthems. The only time you ever really have two national anthems is when you have two countries competing against each other in something international like the Olympics. So the fact that you have two American football teams competing and they're playing two different national anthems is very telling about how they view things. But anyway, you get this commercial with these people washing people's feet. And it starts off innocuously enough, right? And this is supposed to be a reference to Jesus washing people's feet. And it eventually gets to the point where you have, you know, some Christian person washing a woman's feet outside an abortion clinic and a priest washing a gay dude's feet. And it's very subversive in a lot of ways. And I think it's one of these very interesting things where it circles back around to something that V and I have talked about, that Nakavai and I have talked about, and it's rewriting history. And that's kind of the overall theme of this episode, is rewriting history. Because it's happening on several fronts all at once, and that's kind of why I wanted to end up addressing it. And what's interesting is I am going to actually address this Jesus issue from the theological perspective as a Christian. I would not say that I am necessarily a good Christian, but I try, and I am trying, but I do understand certain things because I read the Bible and I have reading comprehension. Jesus did not go around just washing people's feet. This is a weird sort of retelling of the story. Jesus washed his disciples' feet, and it was done as a demonstration of servant leadership. And he then told his disciples to go and do the same for the people of God. Again, not just anyone, right? Like these people, you know, take care of believers and blah, 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 all that kind of stuff. But what I find particularly interesting about it is it's just this idea of kind of rebranding the like love thy neighbor sort of like love is love kind of bullshit that a lot of times gets slammed down our throats. And it's, again, kind of ignoring the fact that there is an action part of Christianity and not like you are just redeemed and saved and everybody is just redeemed and saved no matter what kind of thing. Like there's an action part of it. So if you'll indulge me for a moment, I would like you to take back to the Gospel of John, where there is the woman, the prostitute or adulteress or what have you, that is about to be stoned by a group of people. This is the very famous, let he who is without sin cast the first stone story from Jesus, right? And what is often interpreted with that story is, oh, look, he stood up for prostitutes and adulterers and lepers and all these sorts of things. And it's like, yeah, but you need the entire story. You need the entire context. And what did Jesus say there is, let he who's without sin cast the first stone, obviously. And then he followed that up after everybody had left. He looked at the woman. He said, now go and sin no more. Now, what's interesting about that is obviously, by a very definitional term, we are all sinners and we are all imperfect, so we will obviously sin. But he's talking about intentional sin. He didn't say, hey, you're cool, let me wash your feet. No, he actually told somebody to stop being an intentional sinner, to stop doing something that you know is not okay via nature, God, and nature's God, which is God the Father and God's law, right? Like this is what he's aiming at. And that's the whole thing, right? And that's what's so subversive about this particular commercial and this bit of rewriting about who Jesus was, and that it's just like a love everyone. Sure, you can love everyone and still not approve of their lifestyle. Jesus was not about approving or validating everybody's lifestyle. He didn't do that at all. If you read the Bible, if you read the New Testament for more than 10 seconds and don't take stories out of context, you see that. He doesn't validate or approve of people's sinful lifestyles if that's what they are choosing to do, especially willfully sinful ones. So this, the commercial is just kind of a rewriting of Jesus's character, and it's important to me, even if I'm a bad Christian, to kind of point that out. Which brings me over to X-Men, because we get the trailer for X-Men 97. I know that's a really shitty segue, but it's the best one I got, so bear with me, please. And you get the trailer for that, and they hint at, and then sort of, I saw other articles that were sort of pointing this out, that Morph is non-binary. Now here's, I'm just going to come out and say it. I don't have this sort of beloved view of the early 90s X-Men cartoon that a lot of people have. I was a Batman kid, a Ninja Turtle kid, Spider-Man. I was really never into the X-Men, even though like they were the popular thing at the time. But here's the thing. Morph was only really in that show for... He was killed in the first episode, or at least they thought he was dead. And then he was brought back for like the evil Morph arc that I think was like 3 or 4 episodes. And if the I want to say the show ran close to 100 episodes, and he was in it for 5, 6, 7, 8 episodes, something like that. And you don't really learn much about the guy. As far as I know, there's no established lore with his sexuality and everything like that. So if you want to say that he's gay, whatever. I know why you're doing it, but fine, whatever. We have no pre-established lore, as far as I know, whether or not Morph was into dudes or normal. But to say that Morph is non-binary is kind of weird. And I know a lot of people have been losing their minds over it, and they're losing their minds over, like, oh my God, they're ruining another beloved children's thing. Again, I don't really feel like I have a dog in that fight, because I don't think there's any ground for me to, if I'm just being honest here, to say, well, they're changing this. I will, however, say that they are interjecting something that is a post-2010 Tumblrite view of the world that has somehow bled into the real world, and they're injecting it into a show that is explicitly rooted in the late 80s and early 90s, right? And that's what's actually insidious about this. Again, it's a rewriting of the past. This is a show that is supposed to be a love letter to or take place in that same time period. Non-binary was not a thing back then. Tumblr hadn't been invented, and people kept their mental illnesses to themselves, I guess. Non-binary wasn't a thing. Nobody spoke like that. And before you get on the train of like, oh, well, you know, that's just because nobody really felt comfortable about it back then. Look, I hung out in punk rock circles, metal circles, comic circles, all these sorts of circles where like the weirdos and outcasts were. If it was a thing, I may not have been able to hear about it, but let's be real, probably would have. It wasn't a thing back then. Let's not pretend that non-binary was a term that anyone used before Tumblr. Same thing as like 84 genders and pronouns and all that nonsense. It's not a 1990s construct. And that's the part that is insidious, is that rewriting of history. Which then brings me to Rogue. And the cake is a lie, because apparently Rogue's curves have been replaced by a prepubescent boy who is dressed up to look like Rogue, who is cosplaying as Rogue, because Rogue is supposed to be a very beautiful, curvaceous woman. And before you get on me with the whole, like, oh, well, you just want to get your rocks off to a cartoon, like I said, I never really grew up watching this. I didn't really care for it all that much. I know it was beloved by a lot of people, but the reality is Rogue has a certain body type, has a certain look. Hell, I even remember in X-Men Evolution, people liked the way Rogue's body looked there, and she looked very different than she did in the early 90s X-Men cartoon, but it was a completely different show. It was a completely different timeline, universe, what have you. Again, if this is rooted in that past, what they're doing is trying to give you the quote-unquote modern audience interpretation of what a quote-unquote average woman looks like. Again, who is looking for the average woman? And some people I've seen argue that, oh, the only real shots of Rogue you see are at a distance, and they're low detail because they're at a distance, and this, that, and the other thing. My counter-argument to that is, then why can I still count Cyclops and Wolverine's abs from a distance, but I can't see Rogue's hips and boobs? Just saying. It's again, it's very just undermining that idea of what beauty is, which, as we all know, beauty is a central theme, central archetype of certain stories that goes all the way back to ancient Greece, and we even see it done in common America, right? Beauty, goodness, strength, and honor, these are all rooted archetypes. Rogue is supposed to have that beatific archetype, right? It's supposed to kind of be tragic in some sense that she's this gorgeous woman, but you can't touch anyone without potentially killing them. So that was kind of the whole juxtaposition of her and Gambit's relationship. I don't think Gambit's going to want to have a relationship with her, though, because as far as I know, Gambit isn't into prepubescent boys, which is what Rogue looks like now. Which brings me to the Tomb Raider remake. And again, not a Tomb Raider fan. I've never really understood the appeal that those games really held for people. I was never really into them. I remember playing a couple of them, renting them from Blockbuster. For those young people in the audience, Blockbuster was a video and video game rental store that you used to be able to go to and get games for and movies for, you know, 24, 48, 72 hours, whatever the length of time was, doesn't matter. So I've played Tomb Raider, Tomb Raider 2, Tomb Raider 3. Like, I'm familiar with them. So they released the remake, and the remake apparently has a screen, and as far as I understand it, it only happens once when you first boot up the game, and it apologizes for insensitive descriptions. And this is the same sort of issue I've talked about with digital media, right, where they can kind of say, oh, well, you know, this is an insensitive depiction and blah, 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 whatever. And it completely removes the context of the time, and it completely kind of is void of whether or not people were offended of it at the time. I'll be honest, nobody was offended by Tomb Raider at the time. All anybody ever cared about was how good the graphics on Lara were going to look, to see how sexy she looked. And frankly, those little sharp polygon boobs never really did it for me. Or the big lips. She looked a little bit too much like Angelina Jolie, who frankly was never that attractive to begin with. So again, it's a rewriting of history, right? Like, oh, this was an offensive depiction. We're going to point it out 20 or 30 years after the fact and let you know that it was offensive. Okay, now you can play the game. When the reality was at the time, nobody complained about it being offensive. I know this because it's not like games journalism wasn't a thing back then. And maybe they were just actually, you know, doing journalism on games and not writing left-wing hit pieces, so to speak, about how everything is offensive and everything's terrible. Again, Anita Sarkeesian hadn't really risen to power yet at that point. But it's, again, rewriting the history, right? Nobody was offended by this at the time. Nobody thinks it's offensive in any real way. They're just trying to tell you, oh, this you should be offended by this, and just trigger warning or whatever, which doesn't help anything. So all these things, again, don't seem related, but it is this sort of rewriting of history, even if it is a shallow rewriting of history, right? But if you ignore it long enough, you end up getting something like a 1619 project. And that's why I think it's important to call these things out now, especially the Jesus thing as a Christian, because that's a gross misrepresentation of what a lot of those stories were, about what he did, about what he said, about what he stood for. I always like to go back to this quote from Jesus, which is from Matthew 10:34. Do not think that I have come to bring peace to the earth. I have not come to bring peace, but a sword. Because Jesus was about the truth and rooting yourself next to the truth. And the reality is, these people are not representing the truth. Even if it is a fictional truth, none of these things, these people are representing the truth of the matter. They are trying to rewrite the past for their own means, and particularly in the manner of Christianity. That is something that we need to stand firm and say no. Hell, even in the realm of pop culture, we've seen what seceding the culture to these people has yielded. I say we stand firm and say no. That's all I got for that. I'm HVK. The end.